Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back one more time in the regular season to the Dungeon of Doom. I'm Kyle Meinke, Lions beat writer for MLive, joined as always by Ben Raven. We are high above Ford Field just a couple hours after the Lions took care of the Vikings 30-20 in the regular season finale. Ben, the late games just went final in the last few minutes as of this recording. Lions, Rams in the first round of the playoffs. We'll get into Lions Vikings, but man, this just like we're all buzzing up here in the press box with the prospects of seeing, you know, Lions Rams Stafford coming back to Detroit for the first time since the trade that he requested out of Detroit. Obviously, all-time quarterback in all every way that matters during his years here, but didn't have a division title, didn't have a home playoff game, never won a playoff game, and now he's coming back to Detroit to play his first playoff game at Ford Field in blue and yellow while Jared Goff goes up against the head coach that gave up on him. Ben, I am literally like shaking with excitement for this game.
I am too. It might be the Buddy's Pizza Lomas Brown gave me before the game, but I have the meat sweats thinking about this game, man. The football gods delivered, the script writers delivered, Lions-Rams postseason. What an unbelievable thing to say. The last time Matthew Stafford was here was presumably when he did his farewell photo shoot from the 50-yard line here at Ford Field, and now he's coming back for a wild card meeting at Ford Field, the first playoff game in Ford Field's history that wasn't the Super Bowl in 2007. And couldn't ask for a better matchup, couldn't ask for better stories in every direction, because as you said, there's so much more than Matthew Stafford that connects these two teams.
I mean, Jared Goff was pissed. Let's be real. And he's not going to say that this week. He's going to say he's going to walk the walk and how great Sean McVay is and was. And he left on good terms. That's revisionist history. Jared Goff was not happy with the way he was unceremoniously given up on in L.A. He was the most turnover prone quarterback, turnover prone player in the league his last 2 years there. I mean, it wasn't working well. The Rams were built to win. Right away, Stafford was asking out of Detroit. McVay viewed Stafford as a massive upgrade over Goff. And if you need any more evidence to cut through the bullshit that you hear from coaches about how great both quarterbacks are, look at the three draft picks the Rams gave Detroit to convince them to take Goff off their hands, two of which were in the first round. And the Lions, I mean, they have used that trade to weaponize this rebuild with Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, Jamison Williams, Fatu Melifonwu, who's played some great ball down the stretch. And by the way, you have Jared Goff playing at an incredible level, leading a top five offense each of the last 2 years. And by the way, Ben, we're staring at a banner in the rafters as we speak that Stafford can never win. It has just been a remarkable turnaround for Goff. They used the draft capital to their immense advantage. And the Lions have gone from worst to first in the division 3 years because of it, and are now hosting Matthew Stafford in the first round of the playoffs because of it. It really is just a wild, wild turn of events. You mentioned script writers. I don't think you could have scripted this.
It's looking back on it, I mean, it's one of the greatest win-win trades in NFL history, because everything you just said is true about the Lions. First division title in 30 years, first North title, hosting a playoff game. But guess what Matthew Stafford has added to his hand? He's added a Super Bowl ring to his hand, and that was just 2 years ago. The Rams had that disastrous season last season. Stafford came back, and he looked like Matthew freaking Stafford, if not one of the best versions of himself, to put this college all-star team featuring Cooper Kupp and Aaron Donald into the postseason after a brutal year. I mean, this was a lottery team in most people's minds entering the year, and here they are, Matthew Stafford entering the MVP conversation, and he gets a chance. I mean, it's going to be the most passive-aggressive quarterback quote week of all time from both sides of it. I mean, we are going to get nothing out of Goff this week. I will guarantee that. But I am super fascinating to hear what Dan Campbell has to say, because the man cannot lie.
It's a juicy matchup. We'll be back midweek with a mailbag, and we're going to bring in a special guest. I hope anyway. Their butts is already out.
It's not Matthew Stafford.
But no, not Matthew Stafford. It's not. I can tell you right now, it's not going to be Kelly Stafford either. she's going to be busy with her own podcast, I presume. no comment on that one. But no, we'll be back with a more in-depth look at the Lions-Rams matchup and Matthew Stafford in particular later in the week. For now, Ben, we got a 30-20 win from Detroit. You know, Dan Campbell said going into this game against Minnesota, it was important to win. It was important to give the team the best shot it could at the number two seed. It's crazy to think they would be the number two seed right now if that two-point play had been correctly officiated last week in Dallas. Of course, it wasn't. It affected the Lions. I mean, they're going to have a postseason game taken away from Detroit if they win in the wild card round. And that's it's wild and disappointing. But they did go out and they did win this game. And I think they showed they still have momentum. They have a lot of good vibes going into the postseason. They're obviously sharp. And you knew they would be after what happened in Dallas. It did come at an immense cost with the injury to Sam Laporta. And the initial, again, this is going out. We're recording this just hours after the game. But the initial MRI medical analysis is that he has a hyperextended knee, a bone bruise. That spells Sam Laporta not playing in at least the first round of the playoffs, and maybe beyond that. So they win the game, Ben. They achieved their goals. Obviously didn't get the number two seed, but there's a lot to feel good about. In victory, they got their 12th win of the season, which is the team record. These things are important to Detroit and important to Dan Campbell, who has been through these kinds of situations before in New Orleans, but it came at a cost. And you really have to wonder what the loss of Sam Laporta will mean for this team.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I'm really curious to see how they explore that. I mean, they've kind of been taking the slow developmental route with James Mitchell. Brock Wright did not play again for the second week in a row here. I've seen some speculation out there, but like, I'm curious to see if they kick the tires on Zach Ertz. He said he was waiting out to play for a contender. I mean, all of a sudden there's a pretty big open spot in that lineup. I know it's hard to add guys to the lineup, but like, while this feels like best case scenario on Laporta's knee injury, like it's very, very, very hard to picture him playing this weekend. And it's going to be hard to get him in the divisional round because that's a serious injury. I think you guys saw the replay. Anybody watching at home saw how nasty that knee looked. So like, that's what I mean when I say best case scenario, like disaster. And I mean, the other one that we can't overlook is Khalif Raymond. And that one looked potentially even worse. I mean, the stuff this guy does as a receiver, the spark he brings as a returner, you saw it today. He came so close to breaking two or three punt returns today. He's an all-pro in that department. It looks like he's, I mean, we haven't got an update on Raymond, but that looked bad. I mean, he was not able to put any weight on that, was down for a long time. So yeah, the win today, the shot to keep the window open to the two seed, came with a hefty price. The NFL's best rookie tight end in history.
It's disappointing, obviously, and I think Dan Campbell might take some criticism from fans. I'm sure I'll hear it on the radio on my drive into work on Monday morning, criticizing Campbell for playing starters. But that feels to me, Ben, like low-hanging fruit, like an argument that's not really that thought out. If you want to sit Jared Goff because of the importance of the quarterback position, then I understand that. If you have a starter, like, say, Jameson Williams, who, like, if today was a playoff game, he might have played.
Right.
But you want to proceed cautiously. I understand that too. But you only have 53 guys on NFL roster. This isn't college. You don't have a three deep.
Yeah.
And like in Sam Laporta's case, they also have Brock Wright out because of injury. So they only had two tight ends dressed. You heard Dan Skipper. He reported as eligible and basically lined up at tight end or something effective to that eight different times. Like they were trying to take away from Laporta's usual workload. You also saw it with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like he had seven early catches for 144 yards. They tried to get him off the field after that, which meant you're playing somebody else, in this case, Khalif Raymond, and then Khalif Raymond gets hurt. So I think that's the defense of Dan Campbell, and I understand it. I think if you look at down there at a game with low stakes and you've got Sam Laporta writhing on the field and knee pain, it's easy to say, oh, he shouldn't be out there. He's so good. But like, who else are you going to play there? Like, it's a difficult thing in the NFL, and they did what they could. I have no blame for Dan Campbell. Like, teams have legitimate pros and con arguments all the time about, do you play guys or do you sit guys? And some teams play them and some teams sit them. And I think ultimately, like, playing your guys is the best path forward. How many times have you seen a team rest a bunch of guys and then come out and lay an egg in the postseason? You see it all the time. you obviously take on the injury risk by doing something like that. And today the Lions paid the price.
Yeah, I mean, they were clear from the beginning. They wanted to leave that window to the two seed open. The Eagles got their butts kicked today, so that when it was open, but the Cowboys took care of business. But yeah, it's just, and I think being around the guys in that locker room, hearing from them, I think they liked that they were going to go out there and go for the freaking win today. I think they like playing for a coach that's that open and honest with them. I mean, they knew that from Monday. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson was saying, people were texting him all week, you sitting? And he's just like, no way, man. Just so I think that that's knowing your roster. That's knowing who Dan Campbell is. Yeah, it's low hanging fruit. And I get why it's low hanging fruit. And I mean, if you want to shake your fist at it, go for it. But like, those starters playing today, giving them every chance to get another home game potentially in the playoffs, that was what that was important for the Lions today. It might not have mattered to people on the outside looking in, but leaving that window cracked was very important to them.
I think it fits with Dan Campbell's mindset. I'm just not surprised by it. He said after the game that there are situations, you know, every year is different. There are situations where you might rest guys. You might rest a Jared Goff if he's going through injury or some other circumstances happening. Like, he's an open-minded guy. He just felt like with this team, with where it was, coming off a controversial loss
right.
in Dallas, still having something to play for this week. It's still a relatively young team. Maybe the fear of letting off the gas and what that might mean in terms of, you know, pressing back down on the gas next week. Like, there's a lot of unknowns with that. So that's where he landed on the argument. It cost them with Laporta, but you also had great games from a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who, you know, he had the bad taste in his mouth after what happened in Dallas when he caught what should have been the game winning touchdown. Got snubbed for the Pro Bowl this week, said he was hot. He told me he was pissed. Comes out here, 7 catches, 144 yards, including a 70-yard touchdown that really put this game on ice in the fourth quarter. Ben, you caught up with Amon-Ra in the locker room. Sounds like he was still pissed about the Pro Bowl thing. If we learned anything from the draft, it'll make Amon-Ra St. Brown angry. That's where he's at right now going into the playoffs. And I know he was also angry with being stepped on by an opponent. So what did Amon-Ra have to say to you in the locker room?
Yeah, as Antoine Randall all said, gee whiz, this guy does not need any more chips on his shoulder. But yeah, he said, I mean, he looked us straight in the face and he was just like, I don't know how many receivers have had 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns who didn't make the Pro Bowl. I guess I'm going to have to go home and do my own research. My quick research is just Isaac Bruce in 1995. So he's got a pretty strong gripe.
I didn't realize he's obviously a snub. He's a great player. But when you look at the list of 4 guys who made it, I don't have it in front of me. I don't want to look like an idiot for like missing a guy. So it's Puka, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, and AJ Brown.
AJ Brown. Yep. There it is.
I think those are the 4 guys. Like those are 4 great players. So yeah, he was snubbed, but also they chose 4 great players. But I didn't realize the historical nature of what he's done and also not being a Pro Bowl. Henry.
Yeah, and he was pretty open about the old Harrison Phillips 307-pound knee to his gut or ribs there too. I mean, he said, I don't know what 97 was on. That was intentional. It is what it is, playing football. But yeah, stop pissing this guy off. I mean, my God, that 70-yard touchdown, I think, was 2 snaps after he got that knee to the chest and came out for one play. I mean, this guy, he's unbelievable, man. I mean, stop giving him reasons to be pissed off, because he's like, he is one of those guys that is able to use that kind of stuff and actually translate it to the field and results, and not just distracting emotional stuff. Like, this is real. You saw who this guy's dad is. Oh, we're drinking water now. We're not drinking sweat. Like, this kind of stuff fuels this guy. And I think he really is one of those, buy into that kind of stuff. Just stop pissing this guy off.
Now that I've shook the cobwebs out of my brain,
I'm still
Mike Evans was voted to the Pro Bowl, not Justin Jefferson. I would have taken Amon-Ra over Mike Evans.
1,000 yards in 8 games.
He's just different. And that's a cliche, that phrase, but I've been around this team since 2013, and every once in a while a guy comes along like Calvin Johnson, who like mentally is built different. As an athlete, he's just different, rises to the occasion every time, it moves at a different level than all these other top athletes on the field at the same time. And Amon-Ra has a different skill set, right? Like, he's never going to be this downfield, catch a pass and triple coverage kind of guy that Calvin was. Calvin's going to be a Sports Center star for all of time. But so Amon-Ra is not that kind of guy, but he is unbelievable at what he does. And I mean, I think he has triple the targets of any other receiver in Detroit this year. defenses know exactly where Jared Goff wants to go with the football. And week in and week out and week in and week out, this guy delivers. I mean, like, the Vikings have one of the best defenses in the whole league, top four defense in the league. And man, 7 catches on 10 targets, 144 yards. And he continues to do it on third down, yeah, even though everyone knows where Jared Goff's going with the football. In crunch time, like last week, like, everyone knows Jared Goff wants to throw to Amon-Ra in that situation in Dallas at the end of the game, and he still scores. Mm-hmm. And this week, you know, you're up by a touchdown. You're trying to put on ice to keep this thing loose going into the postseason, and it's Amon-Ra for a 70-yard touchdown, the longest pass by the Lions this season. The guy, he's just unbelievable. And it, like, just in terms of him being different,
yeah,
he reminds me of Calvin. Like, he does. He's just, his IQ, he's just wired differently, and he continues to deliver.
No, he's like all those like cliche things that you can say, but like true and not cliche at the same time. And a fun fact about that 70-yard touchdown is he said all week he was on the inside and Josh Reynolds was lined up in his spot on that play. As they were running out on the field, they say, swap it, swap it, swap it. So they're finding ways to make him a downfield threat there because they know he can get open. Like, he's not a burner. He's not a monster or a Megatron type guy, but they know this guy has the ability to get open. Because like you said, Laporte is out of this game. On third down, you know where the ball is going. You know if it's not a second and 11 trap run, it's, or a third and 11 run, it's going to St. Brown most of the time. And he's just, the connection him and Jared Goff have is truly, truly special. And it's going to be pretty fun to see Stafford and Puka and Kupp on one side, special connections, and then St. Brown and Goff on the other. Because, I mean, those are third down killers. These are not monster wide receivers. These are crafty, gritty. I hate using that word. Just tough gamers, man. He's so special. He's special. 1,500 yards, 10 touchdowns. Joined Herman Moore on like several team records as the only receiver to do stuff in franchise history. Just a very special player. And he just keeps finding new chips on his shoulder, man. What's going on, everyone? Ben Raven with MLive's Detroit Lions beat here. Just want to point in the direction of MLive's new Dungeon of Doom insider tech service. Sign up now for a 14-day free trial. And then after that, it's only $4.99 a month to text with myself, to text with Kyle Monkey, and to text with Corey Woods. And not only are you going to get updates and analysis from us with some one-on-one individual conversations on the side, but you're going to be on the front line to be featured on MLive's Dungeon of Doom podcast when we come calling for mailbag questions. Once again, check out joinsubtext.com/Dungeon of Doom. 14-day free trial, $4.99 after that.
Ben, you mentioned downfield targets. I want to talk about a different downfield target. Dan Skipper. How many times did I turn to you in the press box and say, I love this bleep? Like, I was just so tickled by the greeting that Dan Skipper got at Ford Field. Obviously, he's probably the 1/6 lineman in the whole league you don't even have to introduce at this point. Like,
yes,
he was at the center of the controversy in Dallas. He's the guy who the officials were looking at, thinking he was reporting on that 2-point play when it was actually Taylor Decker. They threw the flag, it was wiped off. We all know how the story. Skipper was the guy they were looking at, and he reports is eligible a lot, and it kind of fooled the officials. I think it was his hand gestures when he was signaling for the offensive formation. But Skipper was pissed this week. He saw the memo the league sent out to all 32 teams where it's like, here's what not to do, basically, when it comes to an offensive lineman reporting as an eligible receiver, while putting a yellow circle around Dan Skipper. And Dan Skipper's not reporting. Yeah. It's Taylor Decker. It's trash. It's really a wild thing that we've already unpacked. We don't have to go there. But it was so funny,
yes,
to see the first time that he reported as eligible in this game and the crowd went wild. And then he reported as eligible again and the crowd went wild. Some of the loudest cheers of the whole game. And he reported as eligible 8 times in this game, in part because the Lions had some depth issues at tight end. And so he was reporting to play that effectively that position. And then in the third quarter, the man runs a route and he catches a pass. And Ben, I look around the stands and every person is on their feet. Like, he got a standing ovation. Dan freaking Skipper, a guy who has had like 20 contracts in the NFL, never made an opening day roster, has spent his life at the bottom of the NFL, which is a real meat grind to make a living that way. You're bouncing from city to city. You have no security, up from a practice squad, down, cut, whatever. And now this guy is being serenaded in Detroit. It's really, listen, he got one pass for 4 yards and was otherwise just a blocker. Like, it's not super consequential, but in terms of what we're seeing this year with the fan support, fans going wild, how many times, like, I've heard, I've been on a flight to a road city and heard singing on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
It's just wild to see how much the Lions' success has unlocked this super fandom in Detroit, and to see that come together on the day when they raise a banner into the rafters in the last day of the season and a double-digit win, to see the sixth offensive lineman at the center of national controversy being serenaded. I love that. It's just a fun storyline.
It is. And Dan Skipper, compared to how he was last week in the locker room in Dallas, was an absolute joy in the locker room this week. I forget who it was. I asked him a question. He's like, man, those defenders come down hard on the ball. That happens fast, man. But no, he absolutely loved it. Him and Decker both said that even the head official today, Brad Rogers, was having some fun with him, was not making fun of the situation, but being lighthearted about it. Because what can you do? That poor officiating crew was getting booed when they announced the Lions had won the toss to start the game. But no, just
I asked Taylor Decker about that, by the way, because he said the same thing to me, and I followed up with, so what kind of jokes? Like, I really wanted to know. Taylor told me it'd be something like Skipper would come in, reporters eligible, and Brad Rogers, the head official, would be like, so anyone else reporting?
So good, man. No, it's so good. And just, they both were like, yes, we saw all the billboards around town. We absolutely loved them. Detroit's got our backs. But just like you said, I mean, this year has kind of confirmed everything we already knew about this desperately hungry fan base from Kansas City to this moment here today and whatever the heck next week is going to be to open the playoffs. I mean, it has been a truly joyous season to watch this fan base kind of live this memorable season. And Dan Skipper today, man, like you said, I mean, shoot, it was a couple snaps after the LaPorta injury. There's a hush in this building. Number 70 reporting is eligible. And bam, one of the loudest pops of the year I've heard. I mean, just great work by everyone. The Lions social media team deserves a shout out for several beautifully snarky posts today. Dan Skipper entering the building and Taylor Decker quote tweeting it with, that's not me. So just great stuff all around. And nice to see Skipper have a smile on his face after such a miserable locker room experience last week, because that guy, like you said, freaking meat grinder, man. Everybody remembers the Hard Knock scene. Go to his Wikipedia page and it's about freaking 40 pages deep on teams. So just cool moment today and a proper reaction. And nice to hear about the officials too. They said it was refreshing to feel like they were dealing with humans today.
Yeah, that was Skipper's quote. Actually, you just stole my thunder. That's going to follow up with, Skipper, it was funny because we're not exaggerating. That was a thunderous applause every time he reported is eligible. And Skipper said after the game that that Jared Goff would be in the huddle because he's just reported as eligible, and then they huddle up. And so while the official is making the announcement to the stadium, they're huddling, trying to get the play call off, and Jared Goff would just stop the play call just to savor the moment a little bit. And he'd look right at Skipper and then carry on. It's beautiful. By the way, I asked Jared Goff too about that play, and he said that Skipper, he wasn't in the route progression. I mean, he was, but he was like, it was like only if they got a certain coverage was he going there, because then he'd be open, which he very much was. That play wasn't really designed to go to Skipper. It just kind of worked out that way, which is very poetic. On the subject of Jared Goff, I'd be remiss if we had talked about him briefly before moving over to the defense. It was a somewhat quietly brilliant day from Goff. Maybe had one pass that could have been picked, which wasn't. Otherwise, extremely clean football, 23 of 32 passing, 320 yards, two touchdowns, 124.5 passer rating. It was one of his best games of the year. And by the way, sacks only one time.
Yeah.
I didn't think the run blocking was especially good. I think we saw, 70 yards from the backs, which is, it's off their pace. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the pass blocking against a really good, really aggressive defense, they really held up well, gave Goff the comfort, the pocket, the clean pocket that he needs to thrive. And he really had a brilliant game.
Yeah, and that's not easy against this defense. As you said, that's not easy against how Brian Flores attacks you, because first and second down, he's sending hell and fire at you. On third down, he's dropping everyone back into coverage and making you beat them. But I just thought Jared Goff's eyes today, his pocket presence, his timing, if he plays anywhere near this next week, this is how the Lions win a playoff game. This is how the Lions make some noise. Because when this offense was playing in the first half, like, they wanted the second half off. Because, I mean, it was absolutely cruising. And it just, I mean, what more can you say? Goff's connection with St. Brown. He knows it's special. He feeds it. Most of his yardage came with St. Brown today. And it's just, like I said, just, it was a, that's like near picture perfect quarterback play, especially in this system, especially when the rushing attack is not as dependable as it usually is. I mean, on a day that came in with both backs a chance of 1,000 yards on the season, eighth or ninth time in NFL history, I mean, it was all about Goff and the passing attack. And just, if he plays like that, this team's got a chance to go far.
It's going to be real fascinating to see how he plays against McVay and the Rams. We've already seen it once before in LA. What was it? Two years ago, right? In 2021.
Super Bowl year, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they had they were so overmatched personnel wise, though. That was the game where they faked two punts. I think they went for a million fourth downs, and they hung for a minute because of those kinds of plays. I think they even onside kicked, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think that's sounding right.
But this will be obviously more compelling game from a Lions perspective, and it's going to be real fascinating to see. I mean, Goff, when he played in LA this year against the Chargers, not even the Rams, I think it was one of his best games of the year. Went toe-to-toe with Justin Herbert in that one. So I think we're going to get the best of Jared Goff in this game.
Yeah, they're going to – I mean, I'm curious to see how much the offensive plan changes or evolves or how cute Ben Johnson and them get with it, because as we've said before, nobody knows Jared Goff better than Sean McVay. And that is something to be wary of this weekend, because, I mean, how that relationship ended, the time they spent together, McVay knows how to make him uncomfortable. And it's on that supporting cast, it's on that offensive line, it's on Goff to just keep him upright and in that pocket, because you saw what happens today.
We're running a little low on time, but I did want to talk about the defense. I thought they played really well. I don't think they gave up a touchdown until, midway through the third quarter or so. You know, we talked about Amon-Ra being on a heater. How about Aiden Hutchinson? How about Aiden freaking Hutchinson? Yeah. He has been a monster in terms of pressure all year. I think he finished second or third in the league in total pressures. The conversion to takedowns to sacks hasn't always been there. And we've talked about it. Sometimes that happens when you're getting chipped and double teamed to triple teamed, whatever, like Aiden Hutchinson does. But the last 2 weeks, 5 sacks, right?
Yeah.
11 and a half on the season. He had another tackle for loss on a reverse. But I mean, that was a big play too, a 12-yard loss, set up its second 30 or something like that.
Yeah.
and forced a field goal. That was early in the game too. And Minnesota was near the goal line. So that was a huge play by Hutch as well. He's been unblockable the last 2 weeks going into the playoffs.
Yeah. 5 quarterback hits today. 2 sacks, almost 3. They switched to that tackle on Jefferson on the trick play attempt to a tackle for a loss for those keeping track at home. But with all that talk about sacks, he finishes the year with 10 and a half sacks, double digits. And after today, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he took over second and pressures created, but just a ferocious day for the pass rush. I mean, it wasn't just the secondary and the linebackers creating pressure today. It was the defensive line. You saw Romeo Okwara getting home. I thought Josh Pascal played an awesome game today. He stayed home on a play action look. That is, for a guy that one of the main things we talk about him is inside outside versatility, that looked like a fundamental edge defender on that play. He's not going to be the pin the ear back pass rusher like a lot of edge defenders, especially second round picks and stuff like that, but the discipline, the comfort he's showing in this defense, and any help they can get on the defensive line today, because Aleem McNeil didn't have the numbers, had a quarterback hit, couple pressures, nice run stop, but like, anything you can do to get eyeballs off of Hutchinson and onto somebody else is going to free him up. And you saw that today, because I think they had double-digit quarterback hits.
I can't believe we're 28 minutes into this and we haven't talked about CJ Gardner-Johnson. He played his first game since week 2. It's just a real – first of all, let's not get lost in the weeds here. Him being on the field now, when he was given a March timeline originally – is insane behavior. It's mutant genes, as Dan Campbell said. He put himself through a torrid rehabilitation process at his home in Florida. Sounds pretty sweet, by the way. He spent $300,000 on his house to outfit it with a field and everything. And pretty crazy stuff. He has practiced the last few weeks, came back to a safety rotation he wasn't very fond of, opened this game on the bench, played a lot of snaps. So I'll be curious to see what the snap count is and played pretty well, it seemed. I watched him pretty closely when he was out there. Didn't make a ton of plays, but he seemed fundamentally sound in the right spots to, you know, to make plays. And then very poetically, end of the game, I think there's like a minute or two left. You know, the Vikings are on their last gasp in this game. And Gardner Johnson is there to pick off the Nick Mullins pass, a terrible pass, but a great play by Gardner Johnson going to the ground, picking off his first pass of the year in the final game of the year, and heading into the playoffs with a lot of momentum.
Yeah, and Gardner Johnson, I mean, we saw it in training camp. We saw it in the first two games of the season. The energy he brings to the field, that it's different. Like, there's a difference between energetic, loud players and CJ Gardner-Johnson. It's just a different volume thing, and I think he is just a perfect foil to share the field with Melifonwu or Kirby Joseph, because I see a better version of Kirby Joseph when Gardner-Johnson is on the field. There is something about that pairing that brings out the best in each other, and I mean, they're field flippers. I mean, that is what they are. They're freaky field flippers, and when you throw in Melifonwu playing the way he's doing, getting pressure, being a run stopper, knocking away two passes, I think it was, for Jefferson today.
You,
I mean,
you saw who had the pressure on the Cam Sutton pick, right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Melifonwu.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, when Glenn, I'm very curious to see how they get over, because I think the one aspect that they could really get after Stafford and the Rams is with those secondary blitzes, by sending Brian Branch out of the slot, by getting Melifonwu near the line of scrimmage and making them account for that extra guy, because those guys are showing a real knack for getting on the, if they don't get a hand on the quarterback, they're at least forcing him up, because Branch had the blitz that forced Mullins inside to get Hutchinson one of his two sacks on the day. And it's just, I hope Gardner Johnson settles down, because this three-man safety rotation could be a very good thing for this defense, because those are three different guys who seem to kind of feed off of each other. And Melifonwu was I mean, you cannot dispute what Melifonwu was doing right now. He has earned this playing time, and we'll see. I mean, Gardner Johnson gave it up for the fans, but he said, nah, they needed me. They needed my energy, not y'all's energy today. And I think you saw that.
You talked about it for the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you have to say?
He was in an interesting mood. He was upbeat and stuff, but it was just like, it was poetic. And he was very thankful that the Lions gave him a pregame introduction and stuff. He felt like that set the tone for the day. But yeah, he's a gamer. He wants to be out there for every snap, and he's not afraid to say that.
What you love the attitude. Yeah. You have to take the baggage that comes with it, and him, you know, saying, I don't want to be an his quote, not mine. I don't want to be an asshole, but like, I should be. I didn't come back from this injury to be in a rotation. No. Like, that's flirting with the line of decency. Mm-hmm. But he's a great player. He does bring attitude and edge. He's an enforcer type, right? Like, you need that. This is a brutal game. This is a physical, violent game. You need guys to play with that. For as much as I love the roster of personalities they've brought in, and how, like, Penei Sewell is tough on the field, but he's a real sweetheart. Yes. I mean, there's so many guys like that. You need sometimes a guy who's going to go out there and enforce, not take bull from anyone. Yep. And Gardner Johnson is that kind of guy. And I think, yeah, his playmaking ability speaks for itself. I mean, he's a tremendous player in this league, but the attitude he brings to the defense, I think, can bring an intangible benefit down the stretch.
Absolutely. And this team is the best equipped team to deal with his craziness and quotes like that while you're focusing on the playoffs, because nobody knows this guy better than Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell from that time they spent in New Orleans when he was at his rawest, his youngest, his wildest. It's a fit. I wouldn't buy too much into those quotes. That's a gamer that wants to game. He came here to win a Super Bowl. He came here to get a big next contract. And like, yeah, he was pissed off last week about that three-man rotation, but I do think what he saw today is like why it's a three-man rotation, because you had Kirby, you had Iffy, you had him all making plays, all making stops, all coming up in that fourth quarter that got a little sketchy for a second there, because Justin Jefferson's a superhero.
You know, we've been asking all season, you know, the Lions are paced by a really good offense. We've just been asking, just give us competent defensive football, and this team is going places. I know the Laporta injury might change the calculus a little bit, but don't look now, Ben, but the defense is playing competent and has been for several weeks. That's 8 turnovers now, by the way, 8 takeaways in the last 3 games. Melifonwu has had a big role in that, but so has the increase in pressure. And Jack Campbell, who, you know, like, has been slow coming compared to some of the other rookies, like a Brian Branch or a Sam Laporta, but he's played some of his best ball down the stretch today. 12 tackles, leading the team, and had a second sack of the year. He was unblocked on the play, but I thought it was a very well schemed blitz that he came in on and took out Nick Mullins. I think he's just playing some of his best ball down the stretch.
No, he is, and he's comfort. He's back in that spot that he's comfortable with. They're not moving him around as much as they did earlier in the season. I mean, I get why they moved him around. He's build is kind of a freak athlete that's built a lot better than a lot of rookie linebackers are when they come in. But yeah, I was just looking at it and I'm like, holy crap, we got to say something about Jack Campbell. So I'm glad you did.
Lions win 30-20. They are set to face the Los Angeles Rams in a highly anticipated first round matchup in the playoffs. Ben, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Lions have opened as a 3.5-point favorite in this game. Who are you taking in this matchup?
The Detroit Lions are going to win this game. I think the Lions get a playoff win. I think they beat Matthew Stafford. I think they cover that spread. Not going to be a blowout, but I do think they win this game by a touchdown.
Well, we'll dive into it more, obviously, as the week progresses, and we'll be all over it with the midweek podcast. But I agree with you. And the Laporta injury, like, we got to see how that plays out. He's such a significant part of what they do offensively, and this is still an offensive team despite how well, you know, how much the defense has improved in recent weeks. So I think we can't underestimate how that will affect the different dimensions of the offense. But something that sticks with me that Dan Campbell said, it's not just a matter of, okay, James Mitchell's going to play or Brock Wright's going to play or whatever happens at tight end. It's much like last year when they traded away TJ Hockenson. It wasn't just, okay, we're promoting this guy to play for him. It's what everyone else can do to absorb his impact in the offense. They averaged 3 more points per game last year after losing Hockenson. I'm not saying that, they're going to do that without Laporta. He's been great. He's been better than Hockenson ever was. But they have Amon-Ra St. Brown. They have Jameson Williams coming back. Josh Reynolds is playing some good ball. They have Jahmyr Gibbs can catch passes out of the backfield. There's a lot of places they can go in the passing game. Plus, this team still wants to run the football. I still think they're going to score. The defense is playing better than ever. I think they have so much momentum on their side. And by the way, this house that we're in right now, the roof might come off. I'm really excited to see what the city's like this weekend, what the stadium is like when the game is played. It's going to be absolutely electric. I think that word is used so much, but you're going to feel the electricity in the air in this game. And I just think that that's going to be a massive advantage too for the Lions. I think I'm going to take Detroit in this game.
I like it. You know, if the run defense can continue to do what they did all season, take away Kyren Williams, get pressure on Stafford, that's the key to success. The offense can take care of the rest.
Ben, get some sleep tonight. It's going to be a long week. But man, am I excited for the first home playoff game in Detroit in 30 freaking years.